say. I'm even buzzing my butt through the weekend. By the time I get home, there's not an ounce of sanity. Between the dogs, my mama's calls, is it against the law for me to get what I need? A good friend and a glass of wine. I'm gonna say it's gonna be alright. A good friend and a glass of wine. A little pick me up to get me through the night.
Welcome to Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. I am Lisa Tarvis. I'm here with my co-hosts, Kristen Fetterman and Daria Ann DiGiovanni. And Daria DiGiovanni or Daria Ann?
Yeah, Daria Ann would be probably easier for everyone.
Yeah,
I'll answer pretty much anything.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you.
Hey, Kristen.
Hey.
So, how was your week, Daria?
Oh, you know, crazy as usual. I'm moving again, and but this time I think it's going to be a more permanent move, so it's been a little hectic trying to finish a book that I'm ghostwriting. I'm so close to the end, but for some reason, I don't know what it is, but the last part of this book, it's just been very challenging, but I'm doing well. How are you guys doing? I'm over my cold, finally. I hope, and it sounds like you are, too.
Yeah, I'm still on the last, like, you know, every morning I wake up, I'm still real raspy, and, you know, I still have, like, no voice by the end of the night and everything, but it's really, I went to the chiropractor yesterday, and I have this amazing chiropractor, and she pressed on some pressure points for my sinuses and for my chest that actually really kind of helped start moving things along a little bit. So hopefully, I think, you know, as when you get older, you get into your 40s, and all of a sudden, you know, things, you don't get over stuff as fast. It takes longer.
Well, you know what really helped me was I finally went out and bought some of that emergency stuff, the, you know, the powdered stuff that you pour in water.
Oh, really?
I'm telling you, knocked it out, finally.
Really? I'll have to try that.
Yeah, I happened to be in Publix and walking down the aisle, and it was on sale, like $5.99 for like 10 packets. And I thought, you know what, I'm desperate, I'm going to try anything. And, I mean, I actually started to feel better after I drank the first one.
Wow.
It was incredible. Yeah.
Wow. So. Yeah, I got, my husband went out and bought me Mucinex, and I never buy it because it's usually like $30 a, you know, like $20-$30 a box for it, you know. So I never really buy it, but my husband bought it for me when he went out, and it was, you know, and he got me some NyQuil and stuff. So I've been, you know, I don't know. I've fought it. It was a 2 week cold for me. It was not fun.
I had it for like 2 days.
Yeah, Kristen, being 19 years old, she got the same thing I did, and hers was gone within 2 days.
Well, I'm glad we're all healthy now. That's good.
Yeah, thank goodness. Tired of being unhealthy. Tired of it. So, anyway, so tonight we have on a great guest, Dale Stanton, who she wrote a book called The Hooker's Daughter. And she's got a really interesting story, and I'm looking forward to interviewing her. We were supposed to have her on a couple weeks ago, and our between our health issues, technical issues, and everything else that was going on, we couldn't make it happen. So tonight we're finally going to have Dale on, and I'm looking forward to that.
Me too.
So do we have anything going on that we want to talk about with the network before we get started with Dale?
Well, we're still, John is still working on our tech show.
Okay.
So, you know, our plan is to have a technology trend show before the end of the first quarter. So he has assured me that he's working hard on that. And just other than that, we had some really great shows this week. And I just encourage everybody to check out blogtalkradio.com/rightstream to listen to the archives. And Alisa, you had live psychic readings this week.
Yeah. That
John had Dr. Tanya back, speaking of chiropractors, and she's awesome.
Yeah.
And she talked about her work with the military. I had a very interesting author on Tuesday, Kent Clisby, and Family Power Hour had a realtor on to talk about an interesting topic, the psychology of homeownership.
Oh, really?
So, pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I missed that one. I'll have to catch that in the archives. That's what I love about being able to record these shows, you know, and we can listen to them over and over again. Like, I'll even do that. I'll be like, I remember somebody said something on my show that I wanted to try. You know, so I'll go back and I'll listen to my own show to get that one little piece of information that I didn't write down when I was recording. So, you know, I the archives are great. So everybody, absolutely, blogtalkradio.com/rightstream, and you can find all of our shows, and you can go to rightstreamradio.com and find all of our a list of what all of our shows are. We have a page for each show, and we have a page for each host. So, yeah. So everybody should visit that, too, when they have a chance. And, of course, like us on Facebook and Twitter as well. And it's Rightstream, WRITESTREAM, Rightstream Radio. All right. So, you know what? Do you want to read her bio, Derry, or do you want me to do it?
Sure, I can
if
you'd like me to.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Most people have a single lifetime career, not Dale. This is our guest, Dale Stanton, I should have said. Dale was into her fourth. While raising her young family, she obtained her RN degree and practiced psychiatric nursing. She parlayed her medical and extensive sales experience to become CEO of her destination management company, which for 20 years organized conventions, corporate events, and meetings for national and international guests. Dale conducted numerous educational seminars and assisted in developing a tourism college degree program. During her fourth career, she penned her memoir and has immersed herself in the marketing process. Through her speaking engagements, she hopes to help others overcome difficult circumstances based upon her own personal life experiences. Dale resides in Boston and Phoenix with her husband.
All right, great. So, Dale, if you could, I believe we have her on hold here. Dale, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Dale. Great to hear from you. It's great that you're finally on the show.
Thank you for inviting me, and I was looking forward to this opportunity today to speak with you.
Yeah, we've been looking forward to it as well. We have so many questions for you about, well, not just about your book, but about your life. And I think the easiest thing to start with is for you to just tell us a little about yourself and your book and why you wrote your book and that story.
Okay, well, fine. My feeling about this book, which as you can glean from the title, The Hooker's Daughter, it was a very in-your-face kind of story to be told. And I decided in doing it that it could have been a dark book, a Mummy Dearest, but I wanted it to be a book instead of condemnation, a story of love and forgiveness and triumph over one's demons. And it really touched on a lot of questions and about how much did I want to reveal of secrets, but I realized that secrets like infections could, if they were concealed, they could fester and become monsters, and I didn't know what I should put out there. And then finally I made the choice to say it like I remembered. And one of the things that really touches upon are issues of intimacy and trust and vulnerability and self-confidence and fear. But I did overcome those inner turmoils within myself, and I decided to tell it like I remembered. And basically, excuse me, basically is a story about my life starting as a child, and my mother was a prostitute, and she supported the family because my father, who lived with us, was not very fond of working or had very little ambition or desire, and so oftentimes, and most of the time, we certainly were privy to the Johns coming and going within our household and within the environs of the community and beyond. And everybody knew about it, and it was a very well-kept open secret. And many people were not allowed to, as a child, play with me or participate. And I have a sister, and she encountered the same kind of discrimination. And I write and tell the story in the book how even the Girl Scouts asked me to leave. I was probably 10 years old, but they were afraid I'd be a bad influence. So we faced a lot of that kind of thing within the community. And as we began to age a bit, it followed us. And then my sister came out in the 50s as a lesbian, which was a very radioactive subject for those times, and it was pretty frightening. And her persona was very masculine, very butch, and she ran away from home, and eventually when the police found her, she was placed in a convent and then into a mental institute, and she certainly wasn't crazy, but that's how they handled homosexuality in those days. So it was a very, very difficult and traumatic time for me. I was only 9 years old at the time when it happened, and I suffered greatly, and my sister and our lives were sort of torn apart. We didn't see much of each other over a period of 20 years. She was homeless for much of the time. And we were on different life journeys of trying to survive our conditions. And in addition, besides the Johns, my mother had boyfriends and various other scams that went on in our household and out in our life. So there was always some kind of antisocial behavior going on. And it was a very, very difficult time, and boyfriends were taken away from me as I matured, and all kinds of very unpleasant things revolving around rejection and a lot of hurt occurred. Then when I finally did try to escape and married, I then was faced with a terminally ill husband who was ill for 6.5 years, and then I was left as a widow as a single mother raising my very small children, and all the trials and tribulations of during his illness and thereafter. And so it was really a very long journey. And even at that time, I was like a pariah again, because as I often say, nobody wanted to hang out with death, and I was dealing again with a very difficult situation. So that's a little bit about the background and the journey that I write about in the book, which ultimately, going out and doing presentations now, I like to convey to people that they can overcome obstacles, whatever they be, whether they have drinking issues or dysfunctional family lifestyles, that somehow or another we can rise above the circumstances and prevail.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. I mean, it seems like just the things you've talked about already are things that you might expect to hear from, you know, one of them from somebody's life, but, you know, as many things as you've already been through. How was your relationship then with your mom? I mean, did you understand what she was doing? Were you embarrassed by it? you know, I don't know how would a 9-year-old react to, you know, something like that.
Well, I write that I was as young as 6 when I really perceived what it was all about. I don't know that I could articulate it as an adult, as a child, the same way I would as an adult. But I certainly understood it was not right and it was antisocial and that was going on. And yes, I did know about it. And my relationship with my mother was very complex. It's very clear she was unable to set boundaries, and we kids were exposed to all her indiscretions, and we were cajoled to participate in her lying and her manipulations. And it was very awful. We lied to our father about her activities, and we acted like props during her shoplifting episodes, and she would scam checks, and as I say, very many other antisocial behaviors that went on. So that was one part of the relationship. The other part, my mother, who I really loved, was very nurturing, and she did the best she could. And I always credited her with being a kind and a sensitive person. And she taught us to be kind and not to shame others, despite that she was shaming us. And she cared for her family. And I truly did believe that she saved us from poverty. And she was a survivor. I admired her spirit. She also was never abusive to my sister or I, and she praised us. And it was very, as I said earlier, a very complex relationship. And I did absorb, though, I spent my whole life casting out my mother's negative influence and absorbing her brow-beating lessons, but only to realize in the end that she gave me a gritty strength to fight my way through trouble and hardship. So in answer to that, to sum it up, I loved her and hated her for who she was and for what she had done to and for our family. And we laughed together, survived together, and fought each other to exhaustion. And she callously sacrificed myself and my sister to save herself. And she lied to me, she'd steal from me, and then she'd sing and dance with me as if nothing bad or perverse had ever happened. So, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. It sounds like it would be a very complicated relationship, to say the least.
Gail, I'm curious, what was your relationship with your father like, and was he around for the duration of all of this? I mean, how did that play out?
Yes, he was around for the whole duration. He lived at home, and he had his head in the sand, I guess you could say. And I often thought that I don't know that he would even know if I had shoes on or cared. And I believe that he probably was extremely depressed, and I wouldn't have known that then or understood it quite that way. But he just didn't function quite the way that we think of a partner or a father, a parent functioning. When you grow up in an environment like that and you have your parent, I mean, with it all, I loved him because he was my father and he was there, and somehow or another you're able to sort through the good and the bad, and you have that protective feeling that with it all, it's your parent. So there certainly was an element of forgiveness, but it was a very confusing and difficult time.
Did he know what your mother was doing? Did he know how she was earning her money?
Yes, I believe he did. He certainly was not a procurer for her, and I think that maybe some people even thought that was the case. But I think that he, in order to live the way he was able to, he went into denial probably, I'm going to say most of the time, and every so often he would come out of that denial phase, and I might have heard them arguing, or he might have left the house for 2-3 days, but he would return. So it was a dance that they did. And she would deny it, and they would fight, and then he would accept it. And as I say, very much so, it was a dance that they did.
Wow, that's just amazing. How did she explain the men that were coming and going from the house?
Well, he obviously, her hours, if you will, were really focused when he wasn't around. I mean, he would go off to work, as meager as his efforts were, he would be out of the house. And then the other times, if a wild cat, if the doorbell rang, or if he heard gossip in the neighborhood from other people, you know, excuses were always made, or the person ringing the doorbell had the wrong unit or whatever. There was always cover-ups. But, of course, I think they were relatively shallow.
Well, now, Dale, were there any extended family members that knew that what was going on? I mean, did you have any kind of support system outside, you know, that you could turn to, whether friends or family or anyone else, church or synagogue or church?
Well, the truth is that I don't feel that there was a support system. I had two living grandmothers and a step-grandfather, and I know that they knew. Whether they were angry, and I have to presume that they were. I don't think they could do anything about it. And so it wasn't a question of that they acted on anything. And in those days, social service agencies weren't, I would say, as prevalent as they are today. And perhaps I would not have been, I'm sure I wouldn't have been left to live at home. I probably would have been placed in foster care somewhere. So the support system was not there. And my sister, who I had felt she was 6.5 years older than me, and I always thought of her as my heroine, my caretaker, my mentor, whatever you want to be. And then when she went off on her journey, and it was a very difficult one and very sad for me at the loss, I altogether lost what I thought was perhaps my support system at the time. So what I'm going to add to this question is, I think that I was blessed with very good DNA, if you will, or genes, or determination, that I made a vow that I had to stay strong and take care of myself because there was nobody to do it. And as young as I was, I understood that I was in this alone. So it wasn't until years later, when I was in my 20s, and I'd never spoken about it with anybody, even though I'd been rejected and suffered a lot of the problems that I was encountering. It wasn't until I actually went to see a psychiatrist that was the first time that I ever spoke about what I had been going through. So that gives you a little, and I credit that relationship, which I felt was the first really healthy one that I was able to have, and that sustained me through as far as her. It was a female doctor being a mentor and a guidance for me.
So what happened with your sister? What was the, I mean, you said that she came out as being a lesbian and things like that, of course, way before I guess it was accepted, or more accepted at least. So what happened with all that? How did your family handle that? And what ended up happening with your sister?
Well, okay, as I said earlier, in those days, in the 50s, it was definitely a radioactive subject. They certainly were closeted, and people didn't have the courage or was not accepted. It's not like today with marriages and gay pride parades and children and so forth adopted within it. And when, in fact, my family, they were horrified, despite what my mother's activities and all that was going on, they still felt terrible because it was such a foreign idea to them. And when she ran away, my mother sought her out, and when the police got involved, as I said earlier too, they didn't know what to do in those days, and that's how they handled it. They put her in a convent initially, and then they put her in a mental hospital for observation, and she clearly was not crazy. And then when she got out, and I mean, it wasn't a long stay, but long enough to make an impact, that's for sure, and eventually she ran away permanently. And she became homeless and for quite a while, and she managed to survive. And then she began to get a hold of herself to change the direction of her journey. And it was a struggle. And for about 20 years, it was very difficult for us. We didn't see much of each other, maybe 3-4 times a year. And it was always, you know, pleasant conversation, and the sisters, we knew we loved each other, but it was very difficult. We were like strangers. that were brought up initially as children together, and we had that bond, and yet it was a very difficult thing to cross over to. Eventually we came together and were very close, and always, even probably as youngsters, watched each other's backs.
Did she ever try to help you when you were still living with your parents?
I would say probably not, because she needed help herself.
Yeah.
She was in a very, she couldn't do much for me or herself. I mean, she was struggling to find her identity and her road to travel, which, again, I repeat, it was a very unpopular, frowned upon, not understood time. So it wasn't anything she could do for me. And I, for her, I couldn't do anything. Not only was I younger, but it was frightening to me. I mean, it was not something that I knew what to do or understood how to help her.
Dale, I'm curious, because you sound like, and obviously you are such a strong person, and your sister must be too, but I want to go back to, you know, because you mentioned you finally, you know, later on in life, found a good psychiatrist and was able to talk to somebody about it, and then eventually you got married. But I guess my question is, you know, when you chose to marry, you first had a relationship and married, did you consciously choose to be as different from your mother as possible? I mean, how did your experiences growing up kind of affect your marriage and the way you raised
your
family?
Well, yes, I think that, again, when I referred to about making a vow to myself to stay strong, all I was looking for was to be what I perceived to be normal. And all I wanted to do was have a normal marriage and fit into a community and not be ostracized and have everyday living, because my world was so upside down. And so that was what I was seeking at the time. And I'll refer to it, and for your listeners, if they get what I'm saying, I wanted a chicken soup environment.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're still
on. Sorry. Yes, that makes sense. You kind of want everything to be the way it's supposed to be, I guess, traditionally supposed to be.
Yeah, I guess that would be a good word, traditional. And
yeah.
I thought I was a voyeur of other people's lives. Of course, you learn you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. And in this, now what I call the journey of having written this, and I go out on presentations, well, it's the most amazing experience when, after I give a talk, when people come over to me and begin to tell me some of the things that have plagued their life, or the burdens that they've carried around, or letters or emails and telephone calls that I get from people that oftentimes I don't even know or might have in the past crossed my path. It just is quite incredible what people hide or don't want to face to themselves, and oftentimes they are not so kind to themselves. So I think that this, my coming out with this kind of a story, really allowed people to feel that they could safely get in touch with some of their things that they've hidden from the past.
Yeah.
Now, Dale, to ask you, when you were, because of the subject matter, I mean, writing the book, did you, were you concerned about any reaction from family members, or had your mom already, you know, your mom, I don't know, is your mom still here, or had she passed on?
No, my mother and father both had passed away, and I probably would not have done it while they were alive. I think it took me years. I mean, I felt that I always had the story in my head, that I wanted to write it, but initially I didn't plan to even put it out there. I just wanted to have my children know the story, because I had shielded it from them, because they too were suffering as youngsters because their father was terminally ill, and I didn't want to taint their environment in any way more than what they were already going through. So I really had intended it only for the children. And then some people that were familiar that I let read what I had written said, oh, no, you have to put this out. It's fascinating, and it's offering too much. So I kind of took that to heart, and I said, okay, I will do that. I mean, at first I felt like I didn't want to be a turncoat to my family. After all, I felt that I was taught to honor my parents and condition, no matter what, never to reveal or harm the family. And I felt it wasn't going to be a pretty picture. So after I published the book, the memoir, I angst a lot about it. And I felt like, what would people say? Was I being foolish? And why was I doing this? And I had a lot of periods of doubt and anxiety and many sleepless nights. But I realized after a while, after I got over the initial doubt that I had done this, that making my life, my private life public, is finally to value the impact of the gossip and the embarrassment and the baggage that I did not pack. And there were not going to be any more secrets. And I realized, thankfully, that I own my story, and I'm not burying it to fester and define me. And the best part is I now get to write the ending.
That's right.
That's well said.
And I like a quote that Carl Jung said, I'm not what has happened to me. I am what I choose to become.
Absolutely.
I just had a question. How was your relationship with your parents as you got older and started your own life?
It was very close, very nurturing, because with it all, again, I stress that word complex. I mean, in one sense, I guess buried there was I hated them, and on the other sense, I loved them. And with it all, I was able to pick out the positives. And I was very, I was really caring about their well-being. And certainly, as we know, as our parents age, I think that they need us more than ever. And somehow or another, that's where the forgiveness came in. And I was able to step up to the plate over, certainly over time. And I never disowned them. Oh, sure, we had our fights and squabbles and things that, my protests, of which I could never control what I wanted it to be, and then after I'd get over it, and I would forge ahead. I guess I saw my life in kind of this way, that I could either fall off a barstool dead drunk or forge ahead, so I chose to forge ahead.
Yeah, that's definitely a good way to look at it.
So what do you think the message is that you want other people to get from this book? What do you, I mean, so many people are going to read it, and people are going, you're going to have different people that probably have had more insane childhoods, you know, things that were even worse than what you went through, but then there are going to be people that can't possibly even relate with what you had to go through. So what are you hoping people take away?
Well, one of the words, the key words that I hear repeatedly from people that read it or, again, come to my presentations is they marvel at the courage that I have and had to tell this story, and that, so, of course, that gives me a big boost to think that people recognize that. And so I think that I'd like to think that they too, can say, well, they can look at the challenges that they faced in their lives that are buried deep. And I mentioned I've heard from individuals about their being abused as children, sexually or physically. I've heard about their drug and alcohol problems. I've heard from people about their lives as hookers even. I've heard from people how they hated their fathers and mothers. Many of them have been casual acquaintances, and some have been strangers. But I have to presume that their revelations resulted from my honesty and ability to go beyond my comfort zone, and it empowered them to do the same. So what my message is, maybe, just maybe, these people are a bit stronger for having exposed their demons. And what I like to think of them, they have been in the arena fighting and getting their ass kicked, and I appreciate that too, and their feedback. I always say, I like to say that life is like a river in perpetual motion, and when we flow with it, we attain a level of tranquility. We never know what the future holds, but we can come to terms with the river and make friends with it. and allow it to teach us to be present in the here and now. And that's the best we can do.
What was the most, what was the hardest thing that you, you know, I think when we write books, and I interview a lot of authors, and Daria even interviews more authors than I do, how do you, and everybody has a reason that they wanted to write it, and a reason that, you know, their own personal reason for writing it. What do you feel was it healing for you to be able to put it all out there? Was it like, what was the, did it help you to be able to talk about it, or was it just something you felt like you had to do?
I think all of the above things you said, and basically people say to me, oh, did you get a catharsis from it? Mm-hmm. Well, certainly you do, but my answer to that initial question always is, in order to sit down and write a story like this, you have to have a level of comfort to begin with, and catharsis. Certainly I worked through it. You don't just sit down and say, hey, guess what, this was all that happened. However, that being said, I acquired more than I had hoped to. And by putting that story out there, it really surprised me, especially when I would get feedback that I've told a great story, or someone would say they couldn't put it down, or it's a page turner. And if being an author, and those of that you might have interviewed, I think the best reward an author can obtain is when you hear that the book really touched them, that it was honest and from the heart. And I think that that is the challenge of putting out something like that. So initially I said I wanted my children to know the story, and that too was a big motivation. I wanted them to know me in a way that I had tried to hide from them or didn't share with them. Not necessarily hide, but I didn't want them to suffer in any additional, because, of course, as I said, they were going through a great deal themselves. And I think the other part of the goal for me in writing the book was, for those of your listeners, yourself, if you're familiar with the Bible, it says if you save one person, you save the world.
Right.
And I'm hoping that I have touched people that can think about it that way.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. It's sometimes you break it right down to, you know, the fact that you know if you do touch one person, if one person gets something from it, heals some part of themselves, relates with you on some level because of it, you've done an amazing thing.
Well, that's what I hope for, and it seems to me, based on again, my journey, and I love to refer to as a journey that I never thought was going to happen. I mean, I put the book out there, but I didn't expect all the positive results of it. That, I mean, it's just been overwhelmingly gratifying. And I'll even refer to right now this moment. I wouldn't have had this moment speaking with you, and how lovely it is for me to be honored to be on your show. So that's what you got to be grateful for, all these wonderful things that happened as a result of putting it out there. So again, you know, maybe somebody might be listening and chooses to read the book, and they get something out of it. I mean, I've been Skyping even with book clubs. I have a book club Skyping with me from Kansas City in a couple of weeks. I just did one out of Florida, out of Connecticut, and all over the place. I mean, what bigger honor can one hope for?
You know, it's such a blessing, Dale, in this age of new technology, too. You know, you mentioned Skype. I mean, to be able to do Blog Talk Radio and Skype and really use all of these tools, you could touch so many more people, I think, than was possible before. So that's also a blessing to be able to do that.
Oh, definitely. And that's what I keep on holding on to. I say, my gosh, I never expected all this. And it's just been just so wonderful. And for your listeners, I really encourage them, if they'd be kind enough to indulge themselves, go to my website, which is www.thehookersdaughter.com, and they'll see some of the lovely testimonials that I've received and some of my upcoming speaking invitations of various places and things that people have written that I've posted on the website. So I want to share the joy and hope that other people can derive some of that pleasure that I have been able to, and as a result of this transparency, so that people know that they're not alone, perhaps on their journey.
Yeah, I think that's great. I have to ask you one other question about the book and being, well, something obvious about the book, the title. The title, The Hooker's Daughter, I mean, that pretty much tells everybody what they're going to be reading. How did that come about? What made you choose that title?
Well, interesting you should say that, because I've actually had a few people say, oh, this isn't true. You know, when I say, oh, it's a memoir, they're like totally stunned because they think, oh, my gosh, that couldn't be. Well, initially I thought, hey, that's the way to go. Then I decided, and I made said the statement in a comment a few minutes ago about I want to do this to dispel the baggage I did not pack. Well, I then considered calling it Baggage I Did Not Pack. And then my son, and let me add, I would have never put this out there had I not had the permission of my daughter and my son, because I certainly would not have wanted them to be embarrassed or suffer any embarrassment or shame. And they agreed and said that it was okay for me to do it. But my son chimed in and said, you know, Ma, he says, I don't think it will be as appealing, let's say, to people if you put Baggage I Did Not Pack. And he was the one that suggested that I go back to the title of The Hooker's Daughter. So that's how the title came to be. And my husband is the one that designed the cover of the book, which so many people comment on it. And I always have to say my husband isn't even an artist, but he really hit the nail on the head, as they say. I mean, I think it's a wonderful cover.
Yeah, it is. It is really nice. It's on, I think, do we have that picture on the Blog Talk page?
I believe we do, yeah.
Yeah, I think we do. I think it is on the Blog Talk page. I know, Dara, you set that up this week, but I don't remember what we put on there, but or what you put on there, but I do think it was really interesting, a really great cover. So tell everybody, you know, where they can find your book, where they can find more about you, where they can track, like, where you're going to be speaking at public engagements and things like that.
Okay, thank you for that opportunity. Again, I'll mention my website, which is www.thehookersdaughter.com. And on that site is upcoming speaking engagements, which are in various places. And then they have the ability to order the book through my site, and if they choose to, I can sign a copy and send it off to them, and there is a mechanism to do that. And if they don't want to do it on the website, it can be purchased through Amazon or Infinity Publishing. And for your tablet readers like Nook and Kindle and iReaders, it's also available that way. So it's very much out there. And also on my website, I mentioned earlier before, too, there are some of the testimonials of what people have said about either the presentation and so forth.
All right, that's great. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I'm pretty sure I downloaded it on my iPad, I think. But I don't remember how. Is it on Amazon, did you say?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. It's on Amazon.
It must have been through Amazon.
And Kindle, Nook, and
okay.
All the tablet readers.
Yeah,
but it's Amazon, Infinity Publishing. And once again, I can send out a signed copy if somebody chooses to order it through my website.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to reading it. I think it's going to be I love the title when the press release came through. I love the title. I mean, the title just gets your attention immediately. And it just goes back to the, for me, and the reason, you know, having it on Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss is the things that we're faced with as, you know, as women and, you know, growing up in certain environments that we're able to overcome amazing obstacles. And you certainly did that. You had a certainly difficult childhood. So
yes, and even into adulthood. And one, you know, it's not, it wasn't just that. I mean, it was a long, long siege for me. And I want to say to you and your listeners, we all have flaws and wounds and deficiencies, and that it can be very hard to admit. But our imperfections are part of us, and to deny them is to really hide from ourselves and from each other. And life is not about flawlessness, but about overcoming. And that's kind of the message of, you know, having resilience and being kind to yourself and loving yourself and not being destructive.
That's great advice. Amen. Yeah, great advice. Amen is right. That's really good advice. And, you know, I really appreciate your being on the show and sharing this with us. And I hope everybody takes some time to visit your website at www.thehookersdaughter.com and check out your the website and the book, which again is available there and through www.infinitypublishing.com, Amazon, and all, I'm sure all places books are sold. So I want to thank you for being on the show. Kristen, did you have any last words?
No, that's an amazing story.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you, and I do encourage, if your listeners, they read the book or they have comments, I also have a mechanism on my website. They can write me an email, and I'm always delighted to hear from everybody. So, again, I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today, and I hope I've spread a little thought-provoking resilience to your listeners and to be strong and good to themselves. And most of all, I wish everybody good health.
Well, thank you, Dale. We really appreciate your being on.
Thank you,
Dale. You're such an inspiration.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Lovely to have been a part of this opportunity. Okay, take care. Shall I hang up now? Is
yeah,
that okay?
you can hang up. Thanks, Dale.
Okay.
Have a great
thank
weekend.
You.
Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
She's so sweet. She's really got, I can't wait to read the book. I can you keep up, Daria, with like the people you interview and things?
No. I had one of my upcoming guests say to me, now I'm interviewing him on February 25th, and he's like, have you had a chance to read my book yet? And
yeah.
I thought, oh my God, if he only knew. Like,
I know. I mean,
how far behind I am.
Right. Two shows a week, you know, your show for you and Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, and then my show. Now, we don't always have authors on. I don't always have authors on, and Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss doesn't always have authors on, but, you know, there's enough that I'm behind. I mean, I'm like reading books like 2 months after the guest has already been on.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, the good thing is, it's great to have so many good reads, but and then between trying to finish a book that I'm actually writing for someone else,
right,
that I'm
right.
really under a deadline now to get done,
right.
and just, you know, and then, you know, all the promos that we do, and
yeah.
the Facebook, and the Twitter, and all, and it's like, oh my gosh, I it's hard to even find time to carve out to sit and read, but I love to read, but, so, yeah, and I find myself, I'll be quite honest, I read enough about the author and the book that I can ask intelligent questions, but I'm not always able to read everybody's books from start to finish.
No.
It's just not possible.
Me either, and I wish I could. I wish, you know, I could, or I had somebody available to read it for me and give me a Cliff Note version of what it's about. That'd be
yeah.
good. Kristen, maybe you could take on that
yeah,
job.
I'm a little busy myself.
Yeah, poor Kristen's got a busier schedule than I do. She's crazy. She's absolutely 100 miles an hour all the time. I told her today, I said, I don't know if I could do it if I were you. I don't, you know. She got Dean's List again. Dean's List again.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
that is awesome.
I'm sorry. I have to brag. I'm your mommy. It's my job. Dean's List in college. This is second time Dean's List. So, you know, I'm all proud of her and stuff. And she's like, stop telling people. And I'm like, no. And, you know, but whatever. You know, it's one of those things. I'm very proud of her. So she works so hard, and then she works almost full time too, and then she does this show with us, and you know, and she's got just, I don't know, I wish I had like just a piece, a little tiny sliver of her energy.
There's not much energy. There's just caffeine.
lots of coffee. She does. She drinks it cold. She drinks it hot. She doesn't care. She just drinks coffee. A lot of coffee. Anyway, so we will, I don't remember, we have a guest on next week, I'm pretty sure, I'm not sure it's 100% confirmed, but, you know, that's the way I roll lately. I'm doing everything last minute, totally in a reactive mode instead of proactive, which is driving me crazy, but I do have a guest on Sunday for Just Believe that wrote a really interesting book about the other side. She's somebody who's psychic and very gifted with being able to communicate with the other side. So that's going to be a really interesting show on Sunday at 7 o'clock Eastern for anyone who wants to turn in to Just Believe. And Daria, what's coming up for you?
Coming up on Rightstream Tuesday, I have author Chris Baker, who I'm interviewing him about his sort of sci-fi dystopia novel called Escape from the Village. And it looks really good. And it actually, the main characters are children in the book. And sort of like a, from what he told me, kind of like a Hunger Games type of theme, type of scenario. I did start reading a little bit of it, and it sounds really good. So I can't wait to interview him on Tuesday.
Oh, that's good. That'll be nice.
Yeah.
That sounds like an interesting story. I love your show because it's so diverse. You have such, like, your topics are all over the place. And that's what keeps Rightstream Tuesday so interesting, is you don't have any two, like, similar, you know, it's never similar. They can be a romance novel in one week and then a techie novel the next week, you know.
I like that. I do. I like that to be eclectic. And even if it's a genre that I don't particularly care for as a reader, I always learn something about the writing process from every author, no matter what kind of books they write. So it's really been great for me, too. I think it makes me a better writer myself.
Yeah, so. I bet it does. It's interesting because it just opens up your mind. I know for even on my show, when I have people on Just Believe, and they, you know, it could be a paranormal person, like a paranormal expert, and they'll be telling me a story, and I'll be like, I don't know. I mean, that's even a stretch for me to believe. And I believe in almost everything. You know, there's not a whole lot I don't believe in. And I sit there and I wonder, and I'm like, wow, this is amazing that these kinds of things go on in the world, you know, that there's so much out there and there's so much interesting things. And you're right, just because I'm not interested in it, or just because I'm always interested, but just because it's not something that's one of my top subjects doesn't mean that it's not something really interesting to interview someone about.
Yeah, and Lisa, you know what I find with your guests that I find very interesting is that even if they're in the same specific field, like with paranormal, let's say, a lot of them have different takes about things. Like, I remember you had one guest, I can't even remember who it was, and you mentioned something to her, well, do you help these souls cross over to the light? And she was just like, they know where it is. Like, she was just really matter of fact.
Yeah.
Like, they know where it is. I don't believe that. I'm like,
I remember
oh my
that.
Gosh.
I remember that, because there are times when I sit there and I'm like, wait a minute, I know what I know, too. And so, you know, for me, it's like when they're saying something that, like, for me, is just not my truth, it's not what I know, it's, like, really hard to just sit there and bite your tongue and not be like, are you crazy? What are you talking about?
And I think she didn't believe in reincarnation,
yes.
Which I found very interesting, because just about everybody else, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the shows that I've listened to, pretty much anybody in that works in that realm believes in reincarnation.
Yeah.
I found that very interesting.
That was mind-boggling to me when because we got onto the subject of whatever we talk about took a turn towards reincarnation. And I was getting kind of like this vibe that she didn't really believe in it. So I asked her just point blank if she believed in it, and she's like, no. And the reason she didn't, and I was just like, wow. I mean, I was just stunned because that had never happened before. I mean, like everybody in my field, you know, for the most part, everybody that I've talked to in my field definitely does. So that was, I remember, because you and I talked about that afterwards. You were like, really?
I was really blown away by that.
Yeah.
I just have to throw this in here really quick because, you know, I mentioned the book that I'm ghostwriting. Well, the client that I'm writing this book for had an experience after a horrible motorcycle accident. I mean, he was pronounced clinically dead, went to the other side, and had this amazing experience that we're incorporating in the book. It's not really, I'm not going to say the book is about reincarnation, but reincarnation is just part of it. I mean, it's just built in to the whole concept of the book, and
right.
So it's very interesting to me to actually know somebody personally who's had that experience,
right.
You know, not just somebody I've heard on the radio or saw on TV, but actually to talk to, and if he had heard that interview, he would have been like, this lady's crazy.
Well, what's sad is it makes you, when something you know isn't real, it's not true, it makes you question everything else they're saying, too. You know what I mean? And that's the problem, I think, like I had with that interview specifically, because I thought, wow, I know that we, you know, have more than one lifetime, you know, so it's like, for me, it just was so, it was just so hard to believe everything else, you know. So I struggled with that a little bit. But you know what? Everybody's entitled to their opinion, and everybody has their own abilities, and, you know, and maybe that's just not something that she's been privy to yet, you know, just not able to dial into yet, you know.
But the thing is, every guest you have on, and I feel like that I have on, and even and John and our other hosts,
right,
you know, Dr. Billy and Sheena, have had something to offer, whether even if it's just to make you think. You might not necessarily agree with them, but at least it prompts you, you know, it makes you think about different things, whatever the topic happens to be. And that's what I really love the most, is that you can learn from everybody, and I think probably even more than people you disagree with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree.
So... And we have fun, too. So we have fun while we're doing that.
Yeah.
So I think it's really great.
Well, yeah, now we've got a bunch of feedback. I don't know why. Do you hear that? Do you hear feedback?
I'm getting a little,
yeah. It's really weird. I don't know why that is. But anyway, the beauty of electronics.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, all right. So, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Please tune in. Next up, on RaceStream Radio is my show on Sunday, Just Believe, at 7 p.m. Eastern. Monday, then we have John D. Gresham on doing Military Monday. Tuesday, of course, is Tuesday with Dari Ann, or RaceStream Tuesday. And Wednesday's Family Power Hour. And hopefully, and then again, Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss on Friday. And I think our next show that we have coming up, hopefully, in the next couple of months, is going to be airing, what was that going to be? Was that Saturday or Thursday?
John was thinking, he was thinking Saturday mornings would be a good time for it. So I have to connect with him this week and see where we're at.
Okay. That's something for everybody to look forward to. We're going to try and touch on the network, we're going to try and touch on lots and lots of different genres and lots of different subjects. And anyone who's interested in being on any of our shows as a guest or wants to be a sponsor or advertise on our network, please feel free to send me an email, and I will make sure the appropriate person gets it. You can email me at lisa@lisatarves.com. That's lisatarves.com. And I will make sure if you're an expert in one of the fields that we're diving into here on RightStream, that I get you to the appropriate host. And if you're interested in advertising, I'll take care of that too. So, any other last words, Daria?
No, I just want to wish everyone a great weekend, and keep rejoicing in the flow of creativity, as we like to say around here, and tune into RightStream.
Yeah, absolutely. RightStream, blogtalkradio.com/RightStream, and RightStreamRadio.com on the internet, and we will talk to everybody next week. Over and out. Goodbye.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you.
Bye.